Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Don't miss out on amazing end-of-sale savings on bedding, curtains and more. Available now in-store or at harrycurry.com.
Well, it's 15 minutes to lift off now for CAO Offers 51551. Let us know how you get on, or if you have any concerns or queries. Liveline at RTE.ie is a simple email. Best of luck to you all, I must say. And we'll talk to people as they come and get their offers. Aisling, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
You are one of the relative few so far in the country of Leaving Cert students who have got a CAO offer already this afternoon.
Yeah, I just got mine there about half an hour ago.
Okay, and is it thumbs up or thumbs down, Aisling, can I ask?
Yeah, I'm delighted. Yay! I got the course I wanted.
Good. What are you off to?
I'm off to UCD to do engineering now, so okay. I'm delighted with it.
Are you? Okay, good. And was it a nervous morning?
I kind of thought I had the points for it, so I was just waiting for the text all morning just to make sure I got it.
My God, Aisling, you sound coolly confident to me, I must say. I wish I had your confidence. How is it, tell people that you've got your CAO offer already?
I had DARE, so I applied to the CAO slightly differently to most people because I have dyslexia.
Okay.
So I could get offered my point or my course for slightly less points, so I just got an earlier text then because I was in a slightly different system to everyone else.
Oh, I understand. So you're on the DARE program, as they call it.
Yeah.
Because you have dyslexia, is that it?
Yeah.
Okay. So, and you get your CAO offer, what is it, about half an hour or so, a little bit earlier than others?
Yeah, just about half an hour before everyone else got theirs.
Okay. So, obviously, there are other people in the country who've got their offers already. They're 18 minutes into celebrating, I hope, for so many of you. 51551, you can let us know. So, can I ask you then, in terms of receiving the offer, Aisling, I mean, do you think if there's any advantage to getting a little bit early? I mean, you know now while the others are sweating.
Yeah, it's a bit of a relief getting it a few minutes earlier, just, you know, because it's a long wait from getting the results to getting the offers.
Mm-hmm.
You're just waiting.
Yeah, for sure. Can you tell me a little bit about the DARE program? It's a disability access route to education. How was that for you, Aisling?
So I applied through it with my school. The guidance counsellors helped me. So what it meant for me is I could get my course for slightly less points potentially, and there's a certain amount of places in each course allocated to it. So children with disabilities such as dyslexia, etc., like, can get offered the course through this route even if they haven't met the criteria for it. So it was a relief getting it.
Was it?
I kind of knew I should kind of get what I wanted.
Mm-hmm. When did you realise that you had dyslexia?
I got diagnosed when I was in fourth class, but it had been kind of picked up in second class by teachers. We just only got formally assessed once I hit fourth class.
Okay. And how did it impact you, can you remember then, at that point, even in second or third class, before you got a diagnosis, let's say?
It didn't impact me like I wouldn't notice, but like an awful lot of my reading was much slower than my peers, and like Irish, I was brutal at it. Like, it just wasn't clicking with me, but I was exceeding milestones in maths and science, but English and Irish I was so far behind on, so it didn't really add up. But when I was that age, I didn't think twice about it, but the teachers and my parents kind of picked it up, and like I got assessed, and like Woman Mentor was brilliant. And, like, she made it seem like I was no different to anyone else. It was very, like, it was accepted by everyone. It wasn't, like, I stood out like a sore thumb in the classroom once I got diagnosed.
So you didn't stick out like a sore thumb, is that what you mean?
No, like, yeah. It was very, like, I was integrated into the classroom. I was taken out for resource at random times throughout, like, the week.
Mm-hmm.
But there's multiple other kids in the same situation and no one looked twice at us. Like, it was normalised, which was great. Like, you weren't treated any differently because of it.
And maybe this is an impossible... it's very interesting what you say there. So you were excelling. You were really good at certain subjects like maths, you say, and so on. You're obviously intelligent, Aisling.
Yeah, but like practical subjects, that's brilliant. But language is not a hope. Like, it's just my brain is just wired differently nearly.
Yeah. So it wasn't, it didn't make sense to you or the teachers that you were so good at some subjects and then you were kind of falling behind, you say, in other subjects. So something clicked with you that, you know, we need to get this looked at. Can I ask you this, and this is the question that may be impossible to answer, but can you imagine now if you continued through the school system without a diagnosis for dyslexia, how would that have impacted you?
I think I would have really, really struggled because it's all the resource I got through primary and secondary school. Like, that got me where I am now. Without that, I'd say I would have been, I wouldn't have achieved half the amount that I did in my Leaving Cert, and I wouldn't have excelled, or I wouldn't have enjoyed school either because I would have found it very challenging.
Really? That's very interesting. What extra resources or what resources did you get especially because of your diagnosis that you wouldn't have got, Aisling?
In primary school, they taught us how to type in resource, which is really good because for secondary school, in case we had to move on to laptops, we were a step ahead. Mm-hmm. And once I got into secondary school, like, instead of doing Irish, I have an exemption. Like, so for four classes every week, I had classes with random teachers of different subjects. So I'd have, like, an hour grind in maths, an hour grind in English, hour grind in biology, and kind of alternated as I went throughout the years. But, like, they're all kind of based around my subject, so just got a bit of extra help overall in everything, and especially in English, and like they taught me how to manage studying, the workload, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really good.
And was that taught in a certain way, say when you got the extra grind or hour of English, was that taught in a specific way for you in terms of dyslexia, or was it just another hour on top?
No, the teachers like broke it down, so it was really small classes, so it could have been 4 to 5 people, and it was more like a conversation than sitting writing notes, and we'd be making visual notes, mind maps. It was more interactive learning, which suited all the girls in my class with dyslexia. We were all kind of, we need to be doing something, colourful notes and listening kind of to learn, so the teachers really based it around that, which was brilliant.
Okay. I'm looking at my notes here. Am I right in saying that you got a whopper of a Leaving Cert?
Yeah, I did quite well.
So do you want to tell people? Maybe you're too modest to tell people, but I'm kind of going to force you, actually.
I don't mind.
Go on, Aisling. Tell them how many points you got.
I got 625.
625. That is an incredible Leaving Cert. And you're off to do engineering, you say, in UCD. And you've got...
Yeah.
Have you got then... because this is a worry for people, isn't it? People who might have a diagnosis for dyslexia, they're facing into the Leaving Cert cycle or Leaving Cert year next year. Like, do you have tips for people as to how to go about it?
If you're in a position where you're getting resource in school, if you have dyslexia, take advantage of it is my best advice. That's really what got me through the 2 years. Like, I had 4 hours of extra study within school every week, which really, really benefited me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about pacing yourself as well. Like, it's a marathon, it's not a sprint. So you really need to do little and often rather than cramming. Because I found if I crammed, I'd forget everything. But if I did an hour, 2 hours every day, I got through it that way rather than cramming.
Okay, little and often. I mean, you seem pretty confident to me now. So you've got, I mean, the diagnosis, the extra help and all that, has it helped your confidence, do you think?
Yeah, it really, really has.
Really?
I have made a massive difference.
Really? Well, my goodness. All I can do is wish you the very, very best, Aisling. It's a pleasure to talk to you. It's great to talk about good news, isn't it? So I must say... you're off. You're going to be one of the top class engineers we have. I know that from the brief discussion that we have. Congratulations on the offer. And I know it's a nervous 5 minutes that you don't have that other Leaving Cert students have now in the country. But can I ask you, if you're a Leaving Cert student waiting for the offer, let me know. Get in touch. Let us know how you got on 51551. Aisling, congratulations to you. And great to talk to you, I must say. And enjoy UCD and engineering. Great to talk to Aisling. Liveline at rte.ie is a simple email. Aaron McGreehan, Fianna Fáil TD, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thanks very much, Cormac.
Now, you are in touch with us because we're talking to you because you say public harassment, and I discussed this in the promo earlier on, or the catcalling, as people call it. You say it is not harmless and it should be made illegal. What, I mean, do you have personal experience of this, Erin?
I think most women have a personal experience with this. If you grew up in any country around the place, you've been maybe as a young girl, as your school uniform, you know, grown men shouting at you, shouting sexual explicit comments at you. If you make a reaction, you should smile or not smile or be, you know, and I just don't think it's appropriate. And it's not a compliment. It's objectifying. It is absolutely makes a woman feel more conscious, makes a woman feel unsafe. And it's not about any complimenting. It's basically a power play. And whether people who do this, whether they realise that or not, that's another thing. But it is. The effect of their words cause a real impact on young women particularly.
What has been the impact on your life, can you tell me? Or has there been one?
I suppose as a younger person, I'm long enough in the tooth now, Cormac, to ignore a lot of it. But there's you know, you're a young girl, you're self-conscious anyway, being a teenage girl, so you won't walk up a street, particular street. You might not stop at a traffic light because you see people, you're afraid, or you see other people being shouted at, so you won't walk there. You'll change your course, you'll change your direction. And I think if any action that makes another person change their actions, I think that's wrong. And every time this topic comes up, I'm always encouraged to speak about it because I'm interested. And it's about opening up the conversation and letting people who are not aware that this behaviour is not acceptable. So I've been discussing it as far back as 2021, when a young group of young girls in Mayfield College in Dublin, Drumcondra, they had a report out speaking about this, how they felt threatened, how they felt, you know, demeaned out in public. So I think, you know, and after the thing the last week and the Surrey police that was reported in various newspapers, I think it's important that we start talking about public harassment.
I think big time as well, which is why I'm delighted to talk about it here. Delighted may not be the right word, but glad to talk about it, to get it out in the open as much as possible, to see if there is a way to stamp it out, because, as you say, Erin, like not walking down a certain road, not stopping at traffic lights for fear that you might be harassed or changing routes, that is not acceptable in any society or situation. And I could ask you if it pertains just to you, do you think? But I know it doesn't.
I'm not special.
Yeah, no, I know it's not common. Even I mentioned in the promo to my colleague Louise Duffy, the first word out of her mouth was that it can be intimidating. Can it be intimidating?
Absolutely. I suppose it's an entire, I suppose, cultural thing, Cormac. Women, and we've spoken about this, you know, it's been on various shows over the past couple of years, how, you know, the fear of violence that women have, whether it be a reality, but the fear is real. And, you know, as a politician, you know, I go to meetings at nighttime, you're entering a car park, or, you know, you grab your phone, you either make a fake phone call or you make a ring phone call. Yeah. You have your keys in your hand, you're looking at your escape routes. And whether that man across the car park is the nicest human being in the world, you do not know, they're a stranger. So they are a threat to you. By being a female, you are immediately more vulnerable. You're smaller. Most women are. I am. I'm not a big girl. So we are in a vulnerable position. Mm. And then it goes back to, you know, when you think of it's not laddish behavior. Sometimes it's called laddish behavior. But really, you know, it's public harassment.
Yeah, and call it and what it is. By the way, I'd love to talk or hear from lads, from men on this, 51551, whether they've, because there are, I'm sure there are men who have, as younger lads, done catcalling. But now as they've matured, they've kind of grown out of it. I'd love to talk to men especially. Stay with me, Erin, if you can. Emily, good afternoon.
Hi, Cormac, how are you?
Yeah, it's something you've experienced, am I right?
It is definitely something I experience. I think any woman today has probably experienced some form of sexual harassment, and that is exactly why I set up Reported. which is a platform for anonymously reporting sexual harassment. I think Erin is absolutely correct in that this should be legislated, and there should be repercussions and consequences for this behaviour. Like, not only is it offensive, uncomfortable, intimidating, as you said, there is a direct link, a research-backed link between sexual harassment and these microaggressions and sexual violence, right? Like, catcalling and these kind of everyday normalized behaviors, they lead to a culture and a society where more serious acts of sexual violence and sexual abuse are enabled and are allowed. And that is very clearly outlined in what's called the pyramid of sexual violence. So if you imagine a pyramid, mm-hmm. on the bottom of the pyramid, we have these kind of microaggressions, as we're talking about, sexual harassment, catcalling. And then on the top of the pyramid, you have more serious acts of sexual violence, rape, femicide, etc. And what that logic shows is that you can't have the top without the bottom, right? In the same way that someone doesn't jump straight into a bank, right? They start with smaller, more petty crimes, more petty theft. They don't get caught, they get emboldened, and they move up the ladder. And it is the exact same thing here.
Can I say this to you, Emily? That I am quite confident that there will be people listening to this conversation who will say, no, there's no line between catcalling and serious violence that you've described there. How would you respond to them?
My response would be that the research is there. They're absolutely, how is it not? Someone doesn't jump straight into, if we're getting more serious, right? Someone doesn't jump straight into physically abusing, physically assaulting a woman, right? Or a person, but in this case, majority men, and it's very oftentimes happening to women. Mm. That behavior is enabled by a society and a culture where all of the smaller things, quote-unquote smaller things, the catcalling that isn't called out, the locker room talk, the boys will be boys, all of that teaches men and boys that actually, yes, we do accept a certain amount of sexual violence and sexual harassment
and I think
in society today. I can do this and mm-hmm. I will get away with it, yeah, essentially. Yeah.
And it's one of the key words that you've said there, I think, in my opinion, listening to you, is enabled. You are enabled in society to, because nobody is going to call you out or stop you. And I put the call out 51551. If you've been in the company of someone, have you called them out if they've done catcalling or publicly harassed women? I'd love to know. You have an awful lot.
And the other. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Cormac. The other thing that I would point out is that we call out sexual harassment in the workplace, right? We have rules and we have policies, if you will, around that. So why do we not have it in public spaces? And this legislation that Erin is working on, I couldn't support it more. I think it's absolutely brilliant. Mm-hmm. Little steps like that are so important to send a wider message to people that actually that's not okay. And there's two sides to it, right? They're sending a message to the perpetrators who are doing it that this is not acceptable. It's not okay. It's almost laughable that someone might say it's a compliment. Like, please, this is 2025.
People do say that,
but
don't
even
they?
They do. Yeah, they do. I'm agreeing with you. But the fact that narrative is even still out there is just ridiculous. But the other side of it is also that it also tells or shows women that actually this is not okay. This behavior is not normalized. You shouldn't have to put up with that. Like, yeah. That is something that I see all the time. And something that I hear from women all the time, right? That when you kind of talk about these behaviors, people into their 20s and 30s, that it doesn't, almost until they're kind of getting older, it only then occurs to them to like, actually, I put up with so much of this when I was younger, and I never actually realized, or never occurred to me, or my friends, or any of us, that like, this should not be normal. I should not have had to put up with that. Mm-hmm. And I could have, or that is behavior, should I say, that warrants supporting, that warrants calling out.
Emily, stay with me. Rachel, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
You've been experiencing catcalling, you say, for about 30 years.
Yes, so I'm in my early 40s now, and I suppose as most women, we'd recognise that it's probably most prevalent, most scary, when you're around the age of 12, 13. Depending on, like, I'd be a similar height now to what I was then, and you're quite innocent and you can't understand why people in vans who are older than your dad are hanging out windows, beeping horns and saying things that are quite frightening. It is quite scary when
12.
You're that age.
12?
Oh, yeah, 12. And I would say it's very, very common. It's usually, first year school age, all of my friends would say the same kind of thing. Now, I still get it now. I mean, about 6 weeks ago, I was walking home and there were two guys in a car. They beeped at me. They did a U-turn on the road, came back the other way. And, like, I felt intimidated, but, you know, as you get older, as one of the other callers said...
What was the situation, Rachel? Was it the evening time? Was it a desolate place?
It was about 7 o'clock in the evening, and I was walking... 7 o'clock in the evening, I was walking towards the gym. The car was travelling in the opposite direction to me. Two guys in the front. Now, the two guys were at least 20 years younger. Now, you know, they probably couldn't tell who or what. They just see a woman and a shape and maybe a hair colour, and... they thought it was a bit of fun, but I'd like to make the point that I love compliments. I receive compliments regularly, and I know the difference between a compliment and catcalling, and it's how it makes me feel, and it's the intent. And often, if we think about sexual assault in the criminal sense, that's not seen as an act of sexual gratification. That's seen as an act of control, dominance, and power. And similarly, I feel catcalling is not done with the desire to pay somebody a compliment, mm-hmm. you know, and like somebody saying, you look lovely today and giving you a smile. That's a very, very different thing. Yeah. And that's not what we're talking about here.
I'm going to try and get into the mind of a young fella who hasn't thought about this very much. You'll say, God, come on, it's a compliment. Come on, you're thinking too much about it. I didn't mean anything by it. Take it as a compliment. I mean, what would you say to that person, Rachel?
Well, it's funny. At one stage, maybe about 8 years ago, when I was working in Dublin City Centre, I used to have to pass an early house in the morning. And that was great fun. And you'd get someone, you know, say something like that. And then if you don't respond, that's the interesting thing. You often get aggression, or if you respond negatively, if you don't take it with a smile, you know, aggression is the next thing that happens. It's not just the words that are said, it's how it's said. It's the look and feel, it's where you are and the intention of it. And you can tell the difference.
Wow.
You know, and I have walked past many times work people or different folks, and they might give you a smile and a nod and say, you're looking well today, and I don't see it as that. And it's not just the words, it's the tone, it's the demeanour, it's the environment. It's you can't just bring it down to words, but you know the difference in terms of the impact and how it makes you feel.
You have to take it with a smile, you say.
That's, yeah, like I've had situations where I've been given out and why are you being so aggressive? I was asked why I was aggressive when I walked around.
Such a common thing.
Somebody. Yeah. So you actually modify your own reactions. It becomes more dangerous if you don't accept it positively.
What's common, Emily, did you say, or was it Erin that got in there?
It was myself.
Erin, yeah.
That's such a common thing. You know, women, and we're told it was act neutral. If you're someone is either shouting abuse or something sexual towards you, you either smile or you try and keep your face as neutral as possible, because if you look angry, they could come at you for being angry and not being any fun or no crack or what's wrong with you and confront you. Mm-hmm. If you're too smiley, then they see that as something, as a lead on. And it's, you know, this goes on in women's brains. We have to, you know, compute this when we're passing past these, going through these experiences. All of this is going on in your head. You can't be too smiley. You can't be too angry. You can't be too neutral, because you know you're in, well, potentially in danger. You don't know if you are or not. And Emily and Rachel are 100% right. It does, you know, lead to that normalization, leads to other aggressions and acceptability of those behaviours.
I'm sorry to cut across it, but you say, Erin, that, and you're a Fianna Fáil TD, I'll remind people, that it should be made illegal. So have you made moves to make it illegal?
Yes, I have. I've started doing a bit of research on different legislations across the world. As you might have known, that the British, they brought in a legislation a couple of years ago. And actually, a couple of years ago, I would have been meeting with the people behind the legislation in the UK, mm-hmm. and that working by the Surrey Police more than likely was in relation to, you know, commencing the legislation that they have passed in the UK. So they have fines in France, in Portugal they have legislation, Belgium, Peru, Netherlands, they have this legislation right around the world. So what I want to do is to, you know, to, I suppose it's great to hear from other women. It's it's great to hear from feedback from people that I'm getting when I have these conversations about what type of legislation that people would want. We don't want to go down fully criminal. There are I suppose negatives to, you know, fully criminalizing these acts, whether we put them into a fine system like they have in France, on the variations of what it is.
But who would impose a fine then if it's not criminal? Here's the problem I have in terms of litigating or prosecuting this. If it's not criminal, it's on the balance of probabilities, isn't it? So how do you prove it? Let's say I'm walking down the street and I'm whistling away and somebody says, you're catcalling that woman across the road. How do you figure out if that's catcalling or not?
Well, I suppose we will learn from the Surrey Police, their operation. Underneath their investigation, they arrested 18 people after the police force sent out female undercover officers posing just as joggers to catch men. During the female officers wore running gear in rush hour.
Okay.
And one of them was only 10 seconds out. Within 10 seconds, they were getting getting beeped at. Within 10 minutes, a vehicle slowed down, similar to the other experiences. Mm-hmm. Do you know, so immediately there was. So I'd be really interested in hearing now from what the Surrey Police are doing, okay, a pilot programme.
Well,
we quite often mirror the UK legislation on a lot of things. I'm saying I'm very open-minded, but I do think the more conversations we have, this is not about criminalising young people, mm-hmm, young men. It's about telling them that this is a criminal offence, or it's outlawed, it's against the law, and that, you know, for them not to do it in the first place,
okay,
to educate them.
Okay,
I have four young boys, Cormac. I want them to grow up to be very open-minded, fair and respectful, yeah, young men, and this is about doing part of all of that.
Yeah, I have two young boys, yeah, and I want the exact same. It's Emily. Yeah, go on.
I was going to say, sorry, Cormac, just on your point around, you know, someone whistling across the street and it being mistaken for catcalling. The first thing I would say is, like, how often does that actually happen?
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, what I would really say is, if a man is catcalling you across the street, like, they're making sure you...
Oh, the line is broken. I'm hoping you'll come
Sugar,
back to me. No, you're okay. If a man is catcalling across the street, Emily, you say... That line is a little bit broken. Rachel, you were going to get in quickly, yeah?
Yeah, I think we should leverage some of the definitions that already exist in some of the legislation when it comes to harassment. You know, is the conduct unwanted? Mm-hmm. What is the impact that's had on the individual? You know, a few different factors, not just... Like, there are ways of quantifying these things and the severity of them.
Okay, you're not reinventing the wheel. Can I ask you, did you say, Rachel, that it's worse on sunny days? Can you explain that briefly to me?
Yes. Always, I don't know. I can't remember the last time there was a sunny day that I walked anywhere that there wasn't at least one beep. And again, like, you know, I can't imagine what it's like for younger individuals. I think people wear less clothes. It's sunny weather. People are in better moods. You know, we're not all in winter coats and
okay,
in bad moods because of the rain. So now some of it, you know, I do firmly believe that some of it is in ignorance and some of it may be with a positive intent. And people really don't understand the impact.
I know, but still.
Particularly for very young girls. Like, if you're 12, 13, 14, and there's grown adults as old as your dad and potentially your granddad, it makes you feel very, very, very threatened.
Yeah.
You know.
And it's time to change that culture.
People don't necessarily understand.
Yeah,
but it doesn't change the impact.
It's at the very least, it's unthinking, let's say. But maybe time to change that culture and have that conversation among ourselves, lads, because we haven't got an awful lot of text to 51551 from lads that may change. So Rachel, Emily, Aaron and others contacting Liveline at RTE.ie. Thank you very much indeed.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1. 0818 715 815.
Marie, good afternoon.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thank you for calling us. You and your family are now in a race against time.
We are, yes.
Explain.
We are. So I have a son. He's autistic. He's currently in a primary school. He's in junior school. His last year in the junior school is second class, which he just started today. he will then be going to the adjacent school next year. So from third class to sixth class, they're in the senior section of the school.
Okay.
So it's been advised that I apply to the autism unit for him so that he continues to progress and has the level of support that he needs. Now, in Ireland, in order to apply to a school's autism unit for a place, you have to apply to your local CNO officer, which is the Special Education Needs Officer. Now, generally, you will apply to them by February 1st of the year your child is due to attend.
So the deadline is the 1st of February, normally?
Well, now, Cormac, it was. So I was scrolling on Facebook the other night, and I saw a comment on, I'm a member of a couple of groups on Facebook for, you know, autism parents.
Yes.
I saw a comment and it said, is it true that the deadline has been moved to the 1st of October? And I got a fright and I went on a deep dive and I found out that, yes, it has been moved to the 1st of October this year. Any parents I have spoken to were not made aware of this. No one seems to have been made aware of this. Oh my God, the rug was pulled out under my feet.
What does this
the
mean?
Criteria.
What does this mean, Marie, for you and your family and your son?
This means that I am under extreme pressure to get his reports, because the criteria to get a letter of approval from a special education needs officer to apply for this place, the criteria is very, very specific. So you have to have a report stating your child's diagnosis, but it also has to state from a multi-level disciplinary team that your child desperately needs this place. Now, multi-level disciplinary team means that it's not only a psychologist, but it's a speech therapist and an occupation therapist, or that there is a team of these professionals that agree that this is the best thing for your child.
Oh, my God.
So not a lot of people have access to that.
Holy cow.
You have to have it in a report.
So hang on a second. Hold on, because I'm taking this in. Firstly, I think it's the Department of Education and Youth that have brought this deadline forward. He and those three care 4 months forward, right? Okay, so that's a bit of a shocker, I must say. I didn't know that you had to have all of those letters and reports, all those criteria lined up, which is an awful lot to do in such a short space of time now. What are we, 5 weeks, 4 weeks out? Holy cripes.
But they also have to be dated within the last 2 years, Cormac. So say my son is 8, he got his initial diagnosis when he was 3. So that report isn't of any use. Now, when he got initially diagnosed, the psychologist said, listen, there's huge red flags for ADHD as well, but they can't diagnose that until a child is typically 7. So then when he was of age, I went back to the same psychologist. Now, this was private, by the way. Went back to the same psychologist because he was getting an educational assessment because he's also dyslexic. And he was diagnosed with ADHD. So I am very lucky that I have that report that is from last year. And that's just by the grace of God.
Sure, look.
But there's a lot of parents that are not in that position. And I know personally of parents who have booked private assessments for their children for November, thinking that they would have reports by mid-December to submit them before February 1st. Whereas that's gone now, you know?
So you're lucky in on a few fronts, really. You're also lucky you saw this on social media. I mean, if you hadn't...
Yeah, I am. I'm so blessed. I did get in touch with a CNO officer and ask when... Because anyone I've spoken to, anyone in any of the autism groups, no one... Really, if one in maybe 50 people had known this, and they only found out in the last couple of days as well.
So let me reiterate this. Let me reiterate this. If you have a child who has autism in primary school, did you know that the deadline to apply to the autism unit in the senior section or the senior cycle of primary school has now gone
any child that's applying for in an autism unit that has to go through the CNO officer, that they only have until the 1st of October to apply to that CNO officer if they're being enrolled for September 2026.
Oh, goodness. Okay, so any child at all. So the new deadline is the 1st of October. Did you know that?
Yeah.
Did you know that? 51551. To go back to my question, if you didn't see this on social media, where else would you have seen it, or would you have been contacted, Marie?
Well, apparently I should have been contacted, but I have had no communication whatsoever to relay this to me. So I should have been contacted, but I haven't. I don't know. I don't know. That's the God's honest answer. Yeah. I don't know. But it was just pure luck that I did see it.
Yeah. So you say you should have, but you weren't, effectively, I suppose.
Yeah.
Is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Now, we've contacted, by the way, as well, the NCSE, the National Council of Special Education, on this, and we're waiting to hear back from them. So, I mean, you would have, let's say conceivably, you could have passed the 1st of October. It's only a few weeks away.
Yeah.
And what would the answer have been then if you went cap in hand saying, hang on, I didn't know that there was a new deadline?
Tough luck. That's what when I contacted the NCSE, it would have just been a case of, you have missed the deadline. Try again next year.
But that's,
it's grossly unfair.
That's exactly what I was going to say. That's hardly fair if you haven't been contacted to let you know of the new deadline.
Mm-hmm.
But we're telling people now there's a new deadline. It's the 1st of October. And particularly, it's quite busy when you're sending kids to school. And then you say your son has autism, and did you say diagnosed with ADHD, Marie, as well?
Yes. So he has autism, ADHD, and he's also dyslexic. So any parent of a child with additional needs knows how this is a particularly difficult time of year for them to get back into the routine. And even if it's something, you know, even if it's something they're looking forward to, it can send their emotions into such a roller coaster. And it's such a difficult time to get them back into that and to adjust to the change, because change is such a huge, huge obstacle to them. And then to add this on top of it, it's beyond belief. And I just wanted to get the word out there to other parents. So,
but why, I suppose? I mean, we did contact the Department of Education. Let me take a sip here. Just to figure out why the deadline was moved from the 1st of February to the 1st of October. And they said to us, Marie, to improve future planning, families are encouraged to engage with the NCSE by the 1st of October 25 for the 26-27 school year, 4 months earlier than in previous years. The earlier timeline will assist the NCSE, they say, in relation to approaching local schools to open new special classes earlier. And the earlier timeline is also being introduced to provide more time for the establishment of new special classes and additional special school capacity. So when you stand back a little bit, they're saying there are more classes, there's more capacity. I suppose that's a good thing. And they're asking maybe for a little bit more time to plan for it.
But how, I would love to know, how are they encouraging parents to engage? You know, if this was announced on their Facebook page on the 7th of August, in the middle of the school holidays. So realistically, I mean, logically, this should have been announced the start of June. Any parents of children with additional needs in a school that were availing of SNA or learning support, or, you know, any child that might warrant a place, should surely have gotten some kind of communication from the NCSE, you know, to tell them of this change, this supposedly wonderful change that will bring about all these new places for children.
Well,
let
me read you another line from the statement the Department of Education has given us. This new timeline was introduced after engagement with all of the key education stakeholders, including bodies representing parents, Marie, and special education advocacy groups.
Well, I have engaged with a few of those, and not one of them, I can tell you, were aware of this. And I have friends who are teachers and SNAs. I have a friend who is a vice principal in Meath, and she wasn't even aware of this. So
okay.
I would love to know. But I just think, I mean, it's common sense. You know, you let the parents of the kids know. if this is truly the purpose and the reasoning behind it, you do it properly.
Look, I'm sure you trust their bona fides. It probably is, but just a little bit more communication is what you're looking for as well.
Exactly.
Look, I know it's a busy day in your house and I can hear the rumblings of the start of second class, Marie. I hope the start of second class went very well. Marie, you've done us a service in letting us know, and we'll put that out to other parents as well. Marie, thanks a million for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, 0818715815 if you're in the same boat, if you're just learning about this now, that there is a new deadline. It used to be the 1st of February, but it's now the 1st of October. Do you have all your documentation in order? And did you know 51551?
Liveline on RTE Radio 1. 0818 715 815.
You're very welcome back. Maud Nahaden, the Women of Ireland, contacted Liveline on Monday about their concerns on breast check, and Kathleen is with us now. Kathleen, good afternoon.
Hi, Cormac, how are you?
You are most welcome to the programme.
I know
you have some concerns or queries about breast check, Kathleen.
Yes, I was diagnosed with breast cancer back in 2013, and I was told that it was imperative that I have yearly mammograms, which, within reason, I have had. Mm-hmm. But my last one was in January 2024, and it's now almost September 2025, and I've heard nothing. But I did attempt to ring them after about, I'm going to say, at least 12 calls to them. It's nigh on impossible to get through to them. And to be told, yeah, there's just a backlog, but they gave me no indication of when I will get my mammogram or anything else.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's where I am at the moment.
And so you're supposed to have a yearly mammogram, you say. You're well over a year and a half now, Kathleen.
It's heading for this 2 years. And as I say, there's absolutely no word of when it will come. Yeah.
Is it a worry for you?
Well, look, you know, it's nice to get them done and to be told everything is okay. I'm not so much worried, but I still get anxious, you know, when it goes that bit longer. The fact that I was told that it was imperative, I have lots of calcification. So they said, you know, it was imperative that I need to have some checked every year.
Yeah, I'm sure it is as the months take by, as we get into autumn now.
Yeah.
I mean, could you do it privately if it came to it, Kathleen?
I'm sure I could, but again, the kind of when the months flow into one another, you kind of think, well, I'm going to get it. It's going to come now any minute. And, you know, and it was just when I heard your program then and I just thought about it. And I probably could, I'm sure, but I haven't looked into that end of it.
Okay. Can I tell you this, right? Because we had such a response to the programme on Monday, I think it was, with women contacting 51551 among the contact details for Liveline to tell us about their concerns or their queries about breast check or their experience. And can I tell listeners, following those concerns on Liveline, breast checker, the HSE, contacted us. They say, we've investigated and found an IT issue affecting women who self-registered between February and August of this year. Their details are on our register, but the system has not been showing them correctly to women on the online portal, they say. So the HSE or breast checker saying, we have a dedicated team working to fix the problem, and we expect it to be resolved by the end of next week. Women affected will receive a text from us in early September to confirm their registration and let them know they can view their details online. Well, there you go. Joanna, if I remember correctly, and Jackie and other women who contacted the programme on Monday, the power of Liveline is there for you to see. But can I come to another part of the statement, Kathleen, that affects you? And I just have a query here for you. They say we will not invite you for breast screening in future, they say, if you had cancer. We will call you to invite you back to the breast check clinic to meet our breast care team. Our breast care nurse and consultant surgeon will discuss your treatment options with you if cancer is found. I wonder, is that we'll arrange your initial treatment, they say, through breast check. We aim to organise this within 3 weeks of your breast cancer diagnosis. You'll be cared for by symptomatic breast cancer services. I wonder, is that the point here? And I'm trying to tease this out. Is breast check or the symptomatic breast cancer service the place for you?
Well, why now and why was I not informed if that's the case? I mean, from 2013 up until 2024, I was brought back to breast health for my yearly mammograms.
Mm.
So if it has changed, why was I not informed that it was changed? And when I spoke to whoever I spoke to a couple of weeks ago, they never mentioned anything like that to me either.
Okay. So, I mean, it's
so I don't
it's in black and white.
Relevant.
Okay, well, look, it's maybe it's worth clarifying this or teasing it out together, let's say, Kathleen, because the statement says,
absolutely,
we will not invite you for breast screening in future. This is if you've had cancer. Instead, symptomatic services will arrange a yearly mammogram for you as part of your ongoing care.
Yeah. So does I presume that that's what I'm on.
Okay.
It's not. I'm not breast health. I'm through breast check.
Okay.
I'm through breast health. I beg your pardon. Not through breast check is where they, you know, where they initially bring you to diagnose you with cancer, and then the yearly mammograms are through breast health.
Okay. And that's you're aware of that as well. But the fact of the matter is, you're over a year and a half into a period where you should be getting yearly mammograms, and that's what you're concerned about. Stay with stay with me, Kathleen. Juliana is on the line as well. Good afternoon, Juliana.
Hi there, how are you?
Not too bad. How are you? What's your query or concern on breast check?
I was listening to your show at the beginning of the week, and I just sent in an email. I'm 57, and I've actually been going for mammograms since my early 40s, just because of family history, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always found the service really good. I have been in every 2 years, not a bother. And just, I suppose, about 5 months ago, I happened to see something in a paper or an ad on the TV about breast check just in general. And I suddenly thought, oh, God, I haven't been there for a while. And I checked my diary and I realized it was well over 2 years, maybe 3 years since I'd been in. And never before did I have to make an appointment. I always got a letter.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to send an email in, and I got a response, I'd say, within 24 hours and I called in for an appointment immediately. I went in, I got parked right outside the door. I was 20 minutes early. I was taken in immediately. I was in and out in, I'd say, 20 minutes. And I got the letter within a week to say everything, you know, was fine, which was great.
Mm-hmm.
So my query on Monday was, look, this is not just maybe a problem with difficulties in recruitment of radiographers, etc. There was definitely, to me, a problem with the admin. And by the way, I'm registered, self-registered, a lot longer than, you know, in the last year. So if there is an admin problem or a glitch with the data, it's not a recent thing. It must be affecting more than people who self-registered within the window you just mentioned there earlier.
Yeah.
So my message is just, look, you have to be proactive about these things. People, women have to manage their own health. Be aware and keep on top of it. Put a message into your phone that recurs every, you know, 24 months to remind yourself to check if you've had the invitation to get checked up.
Okay.
And I think, you know, it's just our own responsibility.
I think
because data problems happen all the time.
Yeah, and system problems happen over the like all the time. And I don't want to hammer any organisation, the HSC or Breast Check or anybody else, because glitches happen in systems. That's the reality of it. But the power of these calls to Liveline, I must say, is that the Breast Check, in fairness to them, are acknowledging that following concerns on Liveline, we investigated and found an IT issue affecting women. And I'm rereading this, Juliana, because of what you say. Mm-hmm. Women who self-registered between February and August this year, that there was an issue affecting, an IT issue affecting those. Their details are on our register, they say, but the system has not been showing them correctly to women on the online portal. You say it goes back further.
I would definitely advise a deeper dive on that, because somehow, like as I said, this was always a very reliable, regular reminder that I've gotten over, you know, since my 40s, and it's failed this year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely a wider window that needs to be looked at, in my view.
Okay, so the dedicated team working to fix this problem in the HSE or in PressCheck, see this, please, as a collaboration between Liveline callers and yourselves. And Juliana is advising, could you do a deeper dive here? Could you cast the net wider? We're not out to vilify, we're out to refine and improve the system for everyone. But I think there's an underlying message, or a more fundamental message, Juliana, from your call, and that's be proactive. And once you've got into the system, it was very good. Would that be fair?
Absolutely, yeah, 100%. Couldn't be better.
Mm. You agree, Kathleen?
Yeah, I agree with Juliana, yes, absolutely. But unlike Juliana, I did actually get speaking to one of the staff when I rang, and they just told me there was a backlog. So I didn't get what she got called in straight away for an appointment. I didn't get that.
Okay. How long were you waiting, did you say?
As in...
So when you called them and they told you there's a backlog, how long was it then before you got an appointment, or did you get one?
I didn't. I still haven't.
Okay.
I still haven't. She just told me there was a... She gave me no indication of when I would get my appointment. She just said there was a backlog.
Oh my goodness.
And I said, okay, so long as you haven't forgotten about me. And she said, no, there's a backlog.
And how often will you contact them until you get that? I mean, do you trust that they do have you on the system now?
Yeah, I'm presuming that, yes. I will try again. It's nigh on impossible. Maybe I need to do what Julianne did and email them. I was trying to ring them. I might try an email.
And we did get a call on Monday to say, after numerous attempts by phone, that the listeners found email better. Is that your experience, Juliana?
Absolutely. And not only that, but I emphasised how anxious I was due to family history or my own, you know, it could have been a personal worry. And I emphasised that in bold. And was very polite now and said, you know, your earliest response would be most appreciated. Mm. And it worked.
Do you know that one thing that isn't in part of this conversation at all, but I'm picking up as an underlying theme, is the stress it's causing women. The uncertainty is causing stress. Would that be fair, Juliana, until you get that appointment?
Absolutely. And even then, when you do get the appointment, you're stressed out of your mind driving in, to be honest with you, and then you're waiting for the results. So the whole experience is not one bit pleasant, as I'm sure all women would agree. So to the one reliable thing over the years was that you were being called, and once you're over a certain age, it's free. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you got that regular invitation, which was a real plus. And you just feel very reassured when it's done and dusted. But, you know, when that, maybe we took it for granted, and then when that was taken away, it causes more worry about the whole process.
Yeah, and in terms of worry, if there's a history of cancer in your family, obviously you're going to be worried as well. Can I read you this? Because a woman contacted the programme some days ago when we were discussing this, whose mum died of cancer. The mum got cancer in her 50s, and the cancer later became metastatic, and she died. The deceased woman has two daughters. One attends the Dublin Public Health System. The other attends in Cork. Now, the woman in Dublin was told an assessment of her family history meant she did not need a referral to family history services. The woman in Cork was told she did. So one was told she did not. The woman in Cork was told she did. The woman in Cork has got yearly invites for breast checks. The woman in Dublin has had arranged her own ones privately. Now, Liveline contacted the HSE about this, and there's obviously a contradiction or a dichotomy here, and this is the HSE response. The HSE can't comment on individual cases, which we respect. Currently, they say, patients can access family history services through their local symptomatic breast disease clinic. The National Cancer Control Programme is currently developing a national pathway for people with an increased risk of breast cancer due to their family history. This will include national clinical guidelines for GPs, which will highlight the criteria for referral, a standardised approach to risk assessment, and national surveillance guidelines for these patients. So the National Cancer Control Programme is currently developing a national pathway for people with an increased risk of breast cancer due to their family history. So why then, though, in this family, Is one sibling told not you don't need a referral to family history services, and another sibling is told you do. So we better get that pathway up and running quick. I don't know if you've come across anything like that previously, Kathleen and Juliana.
No, I haven't.
Not from me. No, I haven't.
No.
My goodness, we're getting more calls on this. Anne, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Not too bad. How are you? You're very welcome to the program. What's your point, please?
Thank you. No, I just think that scope probably needs to be extended. I turned 50 in August 24 and registered and have heard nothing. And when I went on to check the other night, it was looking for all my details again.
Oh.
So it's longer than the scope it sent you in that letter.
Yes, so August 24 is when you uploaded your details.
Yeah.
And we're told here in the statement that women who self-registered between February and August of this year, 2025.
Yes. So yeah, no, so it's going back over the year for me.
Okay, so that's... now, there's kind of another case here, let's say. I was going to say mounting evidence, but I don't want to overstate it. But there's certainly more evidence that the scope needs to be widened.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I did think recently to have a look and go on. Friends were talking about it. And one friend gave a call and she was brought in. And I sort of forgot about it till you were talking about it again this week.
And you've had no screening, Anne?
No.
Have you had contact from BreastCheck?
No, not a thing. Haven't heard a word. No.
Yeah, and you're not concerned. You've just turned 50, you say. So I'm sure, like
so
many others...
Yeah, no, I'm not concerned. I don't. There isn't really a family history. I just registered as all of my friends were doing. But yeah, just when you brought it up this week, I thought, God, I haven't heard anything.
Mm. Will you contact them again now?
I will. But I'll probably wait a week or two. I'm sure they're overrun now with people. But I just, I will now after hearing that. They think the problem is only more recent. I will go and I'll send an email, I'd say, at this stage.
The risk here, though, is as time goes on and people are busy with their own lives and daily routines and so on, it's one of those things that you might just forget.
You do. And that's what happened to me for the last year. I just registered and presumed it would come till I heard it with G and thought, God, I must double check.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, look, be proactive, as Juliana says. The problem is, it's one of those things, you're not doing it every year, not doing it every month. You may forget, and the system may forget you if there's a glitch in the system.
Yes.
So be proactive. Yes. Be proactive, Anne. Look, thank you, Anne, Juliana and Kathleen. Thank you all very much indeed.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, 0818 715
815. As the great Irish swimmer Nick O'Hare did yesterday on the programme, we were discussing sports meltdowns, and one of the greatest and biggest sports meltdowns in recent history was that of Daniil Medvedev, former tennis number one at the US Open, and the world seems to be talking about it. And Nick mentioned that other sports stars like our own Padraig Harrington can keep his cool and doesn't have to resort to such things. Gerard, you're very welcome to the programme.
Oh, thank you very much.
Your ears pricked up when that was mentioned yesterday.
Absolutely. I mean, I do have to feel sorry for Medvedev, because anything like that can put off your concentration. But when Nick mentioned Padraig Harrington, I recall that there was an incident recently, I think it was back in June, when he had I wouldn't say he got aggressive, but he had a small little chat with a guy who used to look for his ball when his ball was lost.
Yeah.
And Padraig did kind of lose the rag a little bit with him. I know Padraig is a very cool character, but he did get very annoyed with the guy. So, I mean, no matter, you're in a professional sport, so I think that little things can kind of irritate you, and I think Padraig even got irritated.
Yeah. Now, I watched that actually this morning again, because once your call came in, because he was cool, I think. He didn't lose his rag, really. He was professional, but he was quite forceful, wasn't he, in making the point, I think, to a reporter, if I'm not mistaken, and it was about golfing etiquette and where you stand in relation to the player taking the shot and so on. And I think what Gerardy was saying, that he was standing too close, is that right?
No, I thought he was saying that he didn't look for his ball because I think Corey lost his ball.
Okay.
And I think the guy was just standing there and he didn't actually help all the other people who were looking for the ball, if I recall.
But the point you're making is that even the likes of Padraig Harrington, who's cool, calm and collected, can get obsessed with a point of that they're... I mean, which is fair enough, I suppose. We're only human, Jared.
Absolutely. If you look at Emma Raducanu, had a bit of an incident as well this year with the baby crying in the at the tennis.
What did you make of that?
I think the baby shouldn't have been there in the first place, but... I mean, their concentration can be, you know yourself if you're playing any sport, especially in tennis, if you're serving and somebody puts you off, it's kind of very annoying. And I'm sure Emma, I mean, I thought she was right to complain about it, but I think she got a lot of bad press about it.
I don't know, was she right? I mean, the baby cries, the baby cries. Same for both players.
Well, I don't think a baby should be at a tennis event like that. I mean, it's normally very quiet while people are serving. Okay, there can be a bit of noise when play is going through a rally or whatever, but when a person's about to serve and somebody yells out from behind, I mean, it does ruin your concentration and probably you would just stop and maybe take the shot again. But if the baby continues to cry, I certainly wouldn't be happy about it staying in. If I was a paying member of the public watching the match, I'd be very annoyed as well that there was a baby there.
But in fairness, I mean, them is the rules, as they say. I mean, the babies are allowed in, which is a good thing. I mean, you're not discriminating against younger parents, let's say, or parents of younger babies. So if they're the rules and the players know the rules, I mean, what's the difference as well between a baby crying, which is not going to go on forever, and seagulls squawking overhead?
Well, I don't agree with you there. Let's say the baby started crying when Padraig Harrington was about to hit a drive in a golf tournament. How would that go down?
And what are we to do? Ask the baby not to cry?
To be honest with you. I don't think it happened.
But
I mean, that's getting away from the point. I do think that Medvedev had a point to make. You said the rules are the rules. The other guy was on his second serve and he was allowed to take the first serve again. Medvedev did go on and win that actual game, but he lost the match.
Yeah. I think he won the set as well. He won that set. Here's the point as well that Nick was making. I'll get your response to this. He was saying that in terms of being professional, you're a role model as well for younger kids. And kids are going to think that type of behaviour, that meltdown, is okay. Is that something you'd agree with?
Well, how many kids watch soccer on a regular basis? And you see the way they attack the referee and the abuse they give the other players, which can be pretty visible on the television. If you can lip read, you can see exactly what they're saying. And I mean, I would say more kids watch soccer on television than watch tennis or golf. So, I mean, I think they're not great role models, are they?
Okay. Well, look at... I'd love to know if... Actually, does that happen? Do they replicate on juvenile soccer matches now on Saturdays and Sundays? Is that type of behaviour, giving out to the ref, mouthing off to other players, sledging, does that happen? I'd love to know. 51551. Anyway, Jared, you make a fair point, I think. Maybe, I don't know if people react, will agree or disagree with your point on babies being at tennis matches or other occasions or not, particularly crying babies. Anyway, Jared, good to talk to you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, 0818 715 815.
We spoke with Erin McGreehan, the Fianna Fáil TD, and other women as well at the start of the programme, and they wanted to make the point that catcalling or the public harassment of women is not harmless, and Erin says it should be made illegal. Frances, good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon to you. I have a different point of view on that because it's probably mostly young, beautiful young ladies that will get the catcalls, but somebody like me that is quite plain, I would give anything to have a man whistle at me.
You would?
Yes.
Can I ask you why? Because their perspective, and they explained it very well, that it didn't feel like a compliment, Frances.
God, I would. I'd feel good if, but as I said, because I'm plain looking, you know, nothing attractive or lovely at all. So it would be a pure compliment if somebody were, a man were to whistle at me.
I understand the point you're making, Frances, I really do. But isn't there a difference between saying, even if you said, I don't know how people would take this, but you look beautiful or you look very well, and screaming at someone across the street or catcalling?
Oh, no, I wouldn't like the screaming across the street. No, that's certainly...
What about whistling and hollering across the street?
Or hollering across the street. No, I certainly wouldn't be au fait with that crack.
No. And what about, Frances, if there was a shout with a sexual undertone to it?
You'd have to explain that one to me. What would be being said?
I don't know, to be honest, but I mean, that's what was described. Unwanted comments, sometimes with a sexual undertone, sometimes with a hint of aggression following it. I mean, that's... And a lady is on the street on her own. Would you find that intimidating, Frances?
It depends on the wording of the... You're not able now to tell me what the words were. You'd have to know what the words were, what was said to the lady.
I understand. But you say you'd like a compliment. Stay with me, Frances. Eamon, good afternoon.
Hey, comic.
How are you doing? What's your point on catcalling, please?
Well, my thing about it is women have a stigma against men. I mean, why do they get so offensive when we whistle? Is it okay for me to turn around and say, oh, your hair is lovely or your coat is magnificent? I mean, what's wrong with people?
But it's intimidating, Eamon.
How is it intimidating?
Well, that's probably not for you or I to say. It's for the lady walking on her own in the street.
Okay. If she feels intimidated, well then all she has to do is turn around and say, I don't appreciate that. That's grand. And then we just walk on. But all the women that I whistle to or say good morning to or anything like that, They appreciate that.
Well, how do you know, I suppose?
Well, they haven't come along to me and they haven't stopped me and said, I feel offensive against that. Or,
well, maybe you see, look, the time is against us. I'd love to pick up on this conversation tomorrow with you, Eamon, I must say, because maybe they're afraid to say anything. I don't know, but I'd love to hear your perspective a lot more because it informs the conversation. But there we must leave it today, I'm afraid. Eamon, thank you. Frances, thank you.